Investor Insights. I love this segment. There's always so much going on in people's lives, and especially Nicolette's life, actually. Less mine and Simon's life, but always Nicolette's.
Our lives are boring.
Yeah, no, our lives are stable, consistent,
we're
nothing's
doing
happening.
So well. It's people's lives. And it just became my life. I got nine lives.
Yeah.
Kat's got nine lives.
And you're leaving after this, aren't you? Again. Every time we have this conversation, we're having this conversation because after this, Nicolette's going to this place. And it's always a different place. But anyway.
I'm working.
Investor Insights.
Last week we ended the conversation on the MPC rate cuts. Yes. I want to pick up on that conversation. Inflation has gone down. Mm-hmm. 19 September, what are we looking forward to? I could cry. You think so?
So here's the story. They've told us that inflation will be 4.5% by the end of the year. That's their estimate, not ours.
Yes.
We're in the band already, but we're close enough. The Fed's going to start cutting as well, although probably only after us in September. And inflation really, really is down. Now, in the last MPC meet, there were the vote was 3-2.
There were
two peeps who voted to cut.
Yes.
So we just got to get one person across the line, and we're in business there. You know what? Our target is 3-6, and I know the governor wants the 4.5, and I know why he does it. I get the whole inflation expectation story. Totally understand it. But you don't cut when you get there. It's like a car. You don't brake when you get to the robot. You brake ahead of the robot.
Yes, absolutely.
So what I think he's trying to do is to get us to 3% inflation and then turn around and say, let's have a new target. I'm happy with 3, but right now I'd like some cuts. My little stocks need some cuts.
Yeah,
everybody needs.
See, at least yours is investments that need cuts. Mine is debt.
Yeah, I'm too old for debt.
No, we absolutely need cuts, but also I think the bigger conversation that we had as well last week with David Shapiro in studio was, is it time to revisit the inflation targeting policy as a whole? And that was just because the policy mandate. And many people might not be aware of this, but the policy mandate comes from the government itself.
Yeah.
It is not Malume Lesetša who determines what we must do here. He's given a mandate as from the government that says, you as the South African Reserve Bank, we want you to achieve 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, being currency protection, inflation management, all of those sorts of things. That is your job, and this is your directive.
Mm.
So what he's doing is executing on a directive he's been given.
Mm.
Now, the other side of that coin is, the same people that give you the directive are the same people that have given you load shedding, or the same people that have given you a collapsed Transnet, or the same people that have driven up inflation to the point where he now needs to bring it down. So
I would push back on that a bit, because you're 100% right. But these targets came in 2000. That was under, was Mboweni already at, I think he was already at the Reserve Bank. But let's be quite clear. Numbers that they pick are made up. Why has US got a 2% inflation target? Because 1 seemed too low and 3 seemed too high. And let's be clear, that's true. Inflation targeting came out of New Zealand and Canada in the early 90s.
There we go.
I mean, it's a nice idea and it sets expectations.
Yeah.
But what the number is there's no science behind it.
Yes.
Okay.
It's a number that we've decided and determined that this is a fair kind of, and this is kind of why I think we had the conversation to say, should we not review this number? Because in emerging markets, you need a little bit of wiggle room in order for the economies to grow, in order for industrialization to happen. You can't be wanting, and to your point, Simon, about the wanting to get our inflation targeting band down to 3%. It's a noble cause, but how are we going to be 1% away from the United States when our economy does not look anything like theirs, you know? So maybe that's a separate conversation to be had at another time.
And then the other conversation is, understand that the central bank sets the repo rate, and our banks all add,
don't bring up the premium,
3.5%.
We spoke about this premium.
I want to go back to it. I went and did some digging.
Okay.
So back in the day when I bought my first property, the repo rate, the prime rate was 26%, and they were making 3.5% on that.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's 11.75%.
They're still making 3.5% on that.
And if it ever, when it drops to 7%, they're still making 3.5%. Somebody, looking at you banks, is getting rich here.
Basically, what Simon is saying is that even if Lesetša Kganyogo drops the repo rate to 0%,
the banks still make,
the banks still make 3.5%. Now that premium, and then on top of that, the banks are the same banks that are restrictive in their lending policies. So now you can't get access to financing outside of a banking institution, and that 3.5% premium is effectively protected indefinitely forever. But that's not why we have the segment. That's that's another conversation for another day.
It's quite an interesting one. I mean, the second thing I want to speak about, I mean, a lot of people are looking into investing into Uber. Personally, I do think it's a little, there's just too many right now in South Africa. But Uber is now called, say, the South African cars need to be 3 years or younger.
Yes.
That age limit.
Yes.
Can we talk realistically what that looks like for a person, a young person who wants to invest in that model? I mean, at 3 years, you're still owing the car and probably quite a huge amount.
It used to be worse. Uber used to have, I remember when they first launched in South Africa, the vehicle needed to be a sedan. You couldn't have hatchbacks.
Yes, it needed
to have less than 50,000 kilometers or something on it.
Yes.
It couldn't have driven for longer than that. So basically you were dealing with new financed vehicles almost exclusively in that bracket. I think they've relaxed some of their laws and things in that respect. I think that from their perspective, I don't really see a justification for using different standards for South Africa if it is the case. I mean,
yeah, apparently it
sounds like it is.
Apparently, I don't know, but yes.
The South African used car market is bigger than the new car market.
I was about to say that, yeah.
Clearly, they haven't done a lot of research into this. But at the same time, there are alternatives, right? I think in South Africa's problem is the moment something like an Uber gets to the size that it gets to, we don't want to try other things, right? I actually discovered that there's an entire app that I was chatting to an Uber driver, and he was saying that the taxi associations came up with their own app, and they were trying to get the Uber drivers to migrate onto that app, and that never really took off, right? So I think from a cost perspective, we could potentially find ourselves in a situation where we just don't have enough Ubers because people can't afford to meet the standards, or we migrate onto a different platform, a Bolt or whatever it is. I mean, there's certain benefits, obviously, to having an Uber, the stuff around the maintenance and the security and the safety and all of that. But I don't see why we are not going to solve that problem for ourselves, come up with a new app that works for South Africa and then ditch the Uber model. But again, I mean, from their perspective, they could always argue it's a safety thing. The older the vehicle, the less likely it is to be properly maintained.
I get that, but I feel like you need to localize to what's happening in the country you're trying to operate.
That's it.
You
know? And if I've got a vehicle that's got a full service history that shows that I've got all of the ticks in place, I am looking after the vehicle. Why does it need to be brand new?
You have an old car. I mean, my car's 15 years old, but it's slick and shiny. It also hasn't done much
still
mileage.
Runs, yeah.
But to making money on Uber. So I remember when Uber first arrived, all my rich friends rushed out and bought cars and got drivers, and the numbers didn't work. And since then, it's got tougher, right? Because Uber doesn't go up, but yet petrol goes up and insurance goes up.
And Uber still takes 20%, if I'm not mistaken?
20, 30, something crazy like that. But speaking to Uber drivers, where there is a space where they make money is Uber Black self-drive. Let's go get yourself a BMW or an Audi and you drive it. Don't pay someone to drive it, because as soon as you pay someone to drive it, there's not enough money to go.
But
that little premium, there's a premium for Uber Black, and then you can't go everywhere. I don't think
I was so shocked. There's no Uber Black in Durban.
No.
But
look, Uber in Durban is the most broken thing in the world.
But how many people qualify for an Uber Black vehicle, if we're realistic about it?
Now you've got to go and buy a fancy car.
That's it. We looked at a 118, a BMW 118 in our first episode of this pod, and that vehicle alone was pricing close to 700,000.
And 118 wouldn't qualify,
right? But to your point on the Durban side of it, have you seen the meter taxis and the guys at the airports? And have you had a conversation with an Uber driver that wants to pick up at an airport?
Yeah, they're so afraid. They're so panicky. They're so
you understand why there aren't Uber Blacks in. I'm not going to go and invest $500,000 to 800 to R1 million in an Uber Black, drive it into King Shaka and have stones thrown at it or something like that happen. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Sure. It's going to be quite an interesting one to see how they're going to try and to adjust the Uber fees to make up for that 3 year, because
relaxing their margins. I don't see them saying we'll give more to the drivers.
I mean, I've been taking Uber Black more recently for two reasons. One is because I now live somewhere where it is available, which was available before, but it was like a 20-minute wait and they could cancel on you and stuff. But secondly, when I get into an Uber, of course it's a skodonk of a car because there's just no money there. It is too cheap. And I would willingly say, and you know, so I tip well instead. But the Uber's kind of like, and it was their model, right? They squeezed the price and that was Dhaka. And they got all the funding and everything else. And basically venture capitalists in San Francisco were paying me to take an Uber down to the local bar or something. It was great fun. But now that model's just broken in many senses. And for the normal Uber driver, can't have a fancy car because it just, you won't make any money. You can't service it. You can't get a less than 3-year-old car with only 10,000 on the clock. There's no money there.
All right, let's go on to our wall. I want to start off with Impact.
They've been going through the most legal.
Yeah, they have.
Hey, there's been a lot of legal stuff.
They got a 21 million rand penalty. Yeah.
No, even before this latest 21 million rand penalty, there were allegations and conversations of collusion in the space, and Impact was implicated. There was a case around it. Part of that case spilled over into this.
Yeah.
The share price has kind of moved in a positive direction in the last month. It's sitting just under 30 rand. 28 rand at the moment. I don't know. I'm not really crazy on it. I don't know about you, Si, but I'm not crazy
about it. I like them. They're a great business. Bruce Strong they run a really, really good operation. But isn't the opportunity here more Caxton who's buying who now? I can't remember who's buying who.
I'll tell you now. There's been a lot of back and forth.
Yeah, so Caxton has a stake in Impact and Caxton has been looking to ultimately do a takeover offer. Maybe it's actually finally going to come. They've got Caxton's got 33.66. So maybe it is Impact because then the offer is going to come. Now that all of this competition stuff's out of the way, Caxton can put their offer on the table and we'll get a nice little jump in the price.
It has kind of moved up a bit, despite the 21 million rand penalty being slapped on the New Era packaging. I don't know. I'd be neutral about it. I don't know how you feel, Si.
I'm positive.
You're positive.
I tell you why. Also because positive. It's packaging. And what we were talking with Chantal, that the structural tailwind's coming, the financial tailwind's. There's a story here in South Africa.
Mm. Okay. So we can put it in our load-up space. We can put it in our buy space, I suppose.
Perfect. Bowen Properties.
No. Very interesting.
Did you just call a no?
Just like, no.
An immediate no.
Waited 5 seconds. There are two companies building houses on the JSE, Baldwin and Colgrow M3. I hold Colgrow M3. The one chart goes up, the one chart goes down. You want to own the one that's going up.
Okay.
They are going into the rental business, something that Colgrow looked at and decided was a bad idea. The problem with rental is you're saying, well, we can't sell them, so let's rent them. That nails your cash flow because now you're getting lumpy once a month rental rather than a big lump sum, nice and quick up front. I think, if anything, it is it's another delisting target. At $1.73, Stephen, what's his surname?
Stephen Brooks.
Brooks. This is so ridiculously cheap. It's a tough space. I like the sector. If I look forward again, the positiveness going forward. But I think Colgrow is better.
Quantum Foods.
You're fat to the fire.
Yes, it had a couple of days of just like movement.
It keeps on popping up to 18, 19 rand. Now it's back at 10 rand and it's still too expensive. They have a boardroom problem. They've been sued by their ex-non-executive director.
Mm-hmm.
They have a significant shareholder who's a competitor, Country Bird, who has said, we want to get rid of the chairman and your lead non-independent director. And we are demanding a shareholder meeting to do this. Now, Country Bird doesn't have enough votes to do it without support in terms of getting people out. But there are claims and accusations out there. Country Bird is a very unhappy shareholder at board level, and that worries me why they're so unhappy. What's the story that's happening here? Mm. And they know the business. They are also in chicken.
So it's a no for me.
You're competing with Astral. You're competing with Rainbow.
Criscuit is a machine. Astral, yeah.
Yeah, so you're competing with Astral. You're competing with Rainbow. They don't have the amount of boardroom issues you have. We're going to pass.
I like that. We're going to pass.
We're going to pass.
Okay, let's go S&P 500. I think that's one of the exchange rate funds that a lot of young people who particularly know nothing about, you know, offshore go into. What are your thoughts on it? Is that something that, I mean, we always talk about diversify and try not to hold individual shares, especially in a country, you know, offshore where you don't know much.
I think the US market has run too hot for too long. I think there is some cooling that needs to take place. We saw early signs of it this past week. Mm-hmm. There was a day where NASDAQ was down more than 2% in that one day, mm-hmm. and it brought down the S&P 500. I completely agree with you from a diversification and an offshore exposure point of view, and it is likely that offshore markets are going to outpace local markets in some areas going forward, especially if we have this whole global tailwind story with interest rates coming down and everything. So there is still potential for the S&P to go higher, mm-hmm. but I think the amount that it's going to go higher by versus where other markets might be or what gains you might see in other international markets, I'm leaning towards being bullish Asian markets more.
The man's too smart. Buy S&P. Everything he said.
It's too much analysis. Too much analysis.
Everything he said is true.
Yes.
But in 20 years' time, we're going to look back at this chart and we're not going to be able to spot
those. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. No.
Look, long-term. I prefer a more diverse, like a global rather yes. than S&P. But S&P is global. I mean, here we're all on our max. Technically, yes. Apple is an American stock, except, yes. well, they sell it everywhere. S&P 500. You buy some every month. You never look at it. You come back in 20 years. You will be richer.
Throw forward to next week. I want to talk a little bit about going into default retirement options. You know, what happens is you join a company, they show you what your options are, and many people don't actually pick and tailor it to their own life stage and what their circumstances look like. They just jump into the default one. Mm-hmm. And what does that actually look like over the years? Because I feel like some people get the biggest shock of their life when they actually get to retirement.
Mm. Yeah, cool. I suppose you're trusting your employer at that stage to make the best decision on your behalf because you're not doing anything else. Mm. But we'll get into that. We'll definitely look forward to that. We've run out of time for the show. It's been a great show as always. We're going to do this again. But until next time, investing isn't hard. Just try it.